I'm just talking to Arnie Bernstein while the commercial's running. Welcome to the Super Bowl edition of After Hours. Thank you for missing some of the first half, as you will if you listen to the whole show, which you should. My first guest is a longtime friend and a guy I've admired for many, many, many years. Arnie Bernstein is a writer, speaker, teacher, and he's written a couple of the best books ever written about the history of not just this place, but of other places. Swastika Nation, which you should get your hands on, Fritz Kuhn and the Rise and Fall of the German-American Bund, and the new edition of his Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing. Arnie, welcome to the show. Both of these books, I mean, for me, you wrote two books some time ago that just resonate like crazy in today's age.
Yeah.
Swastika Nation, tell me that story.
Well, it's crazy, wild story. It's about American Nazis in the 1930s and the people who beat them up, essentially. It was there was this guy named Fritz Kuhn who fancied himself to be the American Führer and led this...
A charming thought right there.
And he had a group that dressed in their brown shirts and did their marching. They actually, they had a big rally in Soldier Field.
No kidding. See, this is, you know, you have a great ability to discover things that have been sort of buried a bit in history's dust. And the Bund is, reading that book, I was just flabbergasted at how popular, so to speak,
it
this
really
movement
was, incredible.
Was. Why was it so popular?
Well, for a number of reasons. They tapped into something.
Yeah.
They tapped into a lot of fear. And it was mostly Germans who were, of course, looking over to Germany to see what was going on there. And who were post-World War One, you know, the laws and the prejudices, they kind of, you know, circled the wagons. Where are we going to be? Fritz Kuhn tapped into that. And he, I mean, he's the most unlikely leader you can imagine. Heavy set, big fat jowls. Big fat belly, big fat glasses, chick magnet too. He was able to get women left and right. So it was like a Nazi Clark Gable.
Hardy. I mean, Hitler himself was one of the most unlikely. You know,
oh yeah,
I never saw what many people, the charisma of that lunatic.
Yeah, well, this guy had a charisma. You can find on YouTube. They had a rally in Madison Square Garden. It was the George Washington's birthday rally, George Washington being the first American fascist who they celebrated in 1939. They had 20,000 people in Madison Square Garden.
Good Lord.
Outside, there were 100,000 people, they estimated, wanting to kill him.
How did you come upon that story, Arnie? How did you discover that story? I mean, it is one of those things that kind of lurked. I mean, it's certainly been documented.
Yeah, it was... Well, like all good things, it starts with the movies. I saw Inglourious Basterds, you know, the movie with the happiest ending ever. And if you haven't seen it, I haven't spoiled anything. But I started looking, what are the real stories of the Jews who went after Nazis? Yeah. And I was, you know, a story here, a story there. I was just finding some interesting stuff. But these Bund stories kept popping up. And I said, there's something going on here. And even my dad told me how he remembered, you know, these guys in Chicago and how scary they were.
Yeah, my father had memories of that, too.
Really?
I'm sure any Jewish American citizen saw that and was terrified.
It was an incredible story. But what brought them down was this crazy amalgamation of characters. Fiorella LaGuardia and Thomas Dewey, who was then the prosecutor.
Right.
They caught him on taxes, same way they got Capone. Mm. They found... What Kuhn had was something called the leadership principle, where the leader is in charge of everything, nobody questions him. Lots and lots of money.
Now, you're reworking that book a bit.
Yes,
you want to have it republished.
Right, yeah. I've recently added a lot of new information, discovered. In fact, there were a couple of reporters at the old Chicago Daily Times who went undercover into the end. What they did was remarkable. There was also, I found, a strong man. Known as the Mighty Atom, who went and beat a lot of them up in New York City.
God, fantastic.
Oh, it's incredible stuff.
Fantastic. I mean, some things, you know, in your case, it's hard for you once you glom on to a certain story, not just Swastika Nation, but also the Bath Massacre. It is currently updated and expanded. This was a heartbreaking story to me. When I first read it, I had you on the show, where the show was in the day. How did you come upon this story?
It was quite by accident. I was looking for a story And I found on, there's a wonderful website called Find a Grave.
And there was something called the, I love that site.
It's a, yeah. But there was something called the Bath Memorial. What is this? And I discovered it, and it was this incredible story. On May 18th of 1927, a madman.
Yeah, a little town. Well, because we tend to think that, that such things as, you know, mass killings are a modern phenomenon.
Right.
And it's not.
It's not, no. What happened was that there was a school trustee, and of course nobody knows that he has this secret under life that's going on beneath the surface. He had laced the school, the local school, with 600 pounds of dynamite.
Jesus.
100 pounds went off, they estimated. The north wing of the school blew up, pancake down. It was horrendous. And at the same time, his house caught ablaze.
38 kids, six adults killed.
Six adults, counting the killer and his wife. He blew himself up in front of the school. In his truck.
I guess there's some good in that. We're going to talk until a quarter to the hour with Arnie Bernstein. His website is Arnie Bernstein, BERNSTEIN.com, and it's a fabulous website. I also want to talk about your website. When we come back, we will talk more about the Bath Massacre. It is a stunning book, and why there's an updated and expanded edition. We'll be back in a couple minutes. I'm talking with Arnie Bernstein. His website is Arnie, A-R-N-I-E, Bernstein, B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N.com. It's a wonderful website. We're going to talk about that after the half hour, but we're currently talking about the updated and expanded edition of Bath Massacre, America's first school bombing. One of the... Thanks to Arnie, it's now notable, but one of these sort of secretive, quiet disasters in the history of, certainly in the history of the Midwest,
right.
If not the entire country.
Well, people didn't want to talk about it. Why? That's the thing. And it was a small farming community.
And there weren't 850 TV stations
right.
that wanted to do 24-hour-a-day coverage, which they would have done.
Right. Plus, 3 days after it happened, Lindbergh took off for Paris. And so it wiped it off the newspapers, which in a way I think was the best thing that could have happened because it gave people time to...
Well, you did a remarkable job in talking about how not only the disaster itself, but the ripple effect of this on a community. And after you wrote it, people got in touch with you saying, wait, I was a hello, Mr. Bernstein, I was there.
Right.
What was that like?
It was profound that people were seeking me out like that. I spoke with one woman, Myrna Gates Coulter, when she was married. She was in Canada, and her caretaker found the book and read it to her. And so she said, I want to go on the record. And then there was a guy named Ralph Witchell, who lived out in Nebraska, who contacted me and said, I want to go on the record. And it was just for history's sake. I wanted to get these things down. They have a museum in Bath in the local school, where they have artifacts of the day. So I wanted to get it to the people there. And then the time came, we said, you know what? Let's update it. Let's get this new information in there.
Sure.
And I was able to expand on a lot of the stories and add new stories as well.
Well, how does this disaster still shadow that city?
It's part of the DNA of the town.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those, when you think quintessential small Midwestern town, that's Bath. It's, parts of it still look like it did in the 20s.
Wow.
There's no stoplight. It's one of those, the big intersection is a four-way stop sign.
Is that right?
Yeah, and the people who live there have been there for
generations.
Yeah.
There can't be a sense of pride in this.
It's who they are.
Yeah.
And there's, I talk in the new introduction about memory and being the caretakers of memory. And that's what they are, you know. So these kids who were wiped out before they even had a chance, they're remembered, and that's the way it should be.
You know, it echoes in Our Lady of the Angels Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, that terrible disaster in Chicago. But tell me more about this. Andrew Kehoe was nuts. Is that? That doesn't go deep enough,
right? I mean,
you certainly go deeper than just.
He was a psychopath, and not in the sense of the guy with the saw running around in the movies or something, but who's able to lead a double life.
Yeah,
and something in his brain was just unhinged and said, "This is how I'm going to make my mark on the world." I tried getting inside his head, and I'm glad I didn't. But it was just incredible what this man did and the months that he took in preparation to do it.
He set his own farm afire, yeah, did he not?
Exactly, and he had his house set ablaze. He had dynamite in the house, so it was blowing up left and right. He wired the horses. He hobbled the horses' legs. They roasted alive. His wife was found in a handcart and burned beyond recognition. Now, did he kill her? We don't know. There's no way to know. He could have killed her. Could have left her burned alive.
My guess would be yes.
Yeah, but it was an incredible story.
Writing about something like this, Arnie, and writing about Nazis in America, does it take a toll on you as a writer?
You know, yes and no. I get so into it when I'm writing.
Yeah.
It just becomes, I turn almost like into a machine, you know, producing it. I did have dreams, though, that did affect me. And, you know, would make me wake up occasionally at night. But, you know, when you take on these stories, you know, you just have to ignore that aspect and just go
guess
for
because
it.
Because both of these books are haunting to me. Not, you know, a couple of his previous books, Hollywood on Lake Michigan, which was one of all-time favorite books, 100 Years of Chicago in the Movies.
Thank you.
Is a joyful.
It's fun to do.
Joyful book. Let me ask you, I don't know if I just did, but what made you a writer? What made you a writer in the first place?
I can't sing and dance. No, I always
can.
But I always wanted, I mean, I was always making up stories when I was a kid, and when I learned to type, you know, I took off like a bandit. It's, I don't know how to do anything else. It's what I like to do.
Well, Arnie lives with a wonderful woman, his wife Cheryl, the long-suffering Cheryl, because every mate of a writer is long-suffering.
I can promise you she's laughing and thanking you right now.
I adore her.
We call her Rick's boyfriend at home.
Yeah, that's right, as well you should.
Yeah.
The updated and expanded edition is just recently published. It is also going to be the focus of a film that's in the works,
right,
isn't it?
A guy named Matt Martin has done a four-part documentary. It's called Forgotten. I'm one of the talking heads in it.
Sure.
Recreations. He's got interviews as well. In fact, he and I both started the projects about the same time.
Yeah.
And we shared information and interviews and things like that. Great guy.
Have you seen any of it?
I've seen the part of it, and he knows how to cut a film. Matt is really good at what he does. There's going to be an announcement on it later this year.
Fantastic.
I will keep you posted.
Wow, fantastic.
It's a hell of a movie, though.
Four-part documentary.
At this point, I think it's four parts, yeah.
Yeah, you can never tell. That's a weird business.
Oh, yeah.
Arnie and I were talking before and during the show about the weird business of modern publishing. Was it hard to convince a publisher you have here? It's a wonderful University of Michigan Press, which is a great press.
Right.
It wasn't hard to convince them to.
No, they fell in love with it right away. It they understood, and they got it right away. I mean, obviously, it's a Michigan story as well.
Where is Bath exactly?
Bath is about 10 miles, I'd say, outside of Lansing.
Okay.
But in 1927, there's no interstate. There's no internet.
Yeah.
And so it was the other side of the world. They had no electricity.
Now, when the press, and I'm assuming they did, the press, because there were a lot more newspapers that day, when they descended on this town, what was that like? Obviously, Tribune reporters were up there.
Oh, yeah, Tribune reporters were there, and actually, the Tribune got some of the first photographs of it. They took them like 24 hours, so that was like internet speed in those days.
Mm-hmm.
People were flying in from New York, from Ohio nearby. What was really incredible was people wanted to see it. And they had something like, they were ghoulish. 50,000 cars descended that weekend.
No.
Incredible. I mean, if there's 10 cars in Bath, it's a traffic jam.
Wow.
But they estimated 50,000 people came in. People couldn't hear that in the funerals. People couldn't get around to the funerals because it was just packed. People wandering through the farmland. And
curiosity seekers.
Oh.
I mean.
Some in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
In one instance, a woman came up to somebody's house and said, I want to see the dead body.
No.
Yeah. It's incredible.
What compelled, I don't know,
if neither of us are philosophers. I'd be in a different business, you know.
It's the same thing that draws people to tragedy on TV.
Yeah.
And that's why fires make good TV, because you got video of a fire and you got video of people being out of a house. When you think of those young lives lost, and the parents and grandparents of the people left, that's a heart-rending.
Yeah. And I tell you, I became really close with one of the survivors, Josephine Cushman. She was at that time, Josephine Cushman Vale, lived to 100. And wow. It's funny, one of the last times I saw her, she said, "I'm going to live to be 100." And she did.
And she
died about 6 weeks later. But this is how I conclude the book. She went out every year. Her brother was 7 years old when he was killed. And she was 14. Every year, for as long as the rest of her life, she would go out and leave tulips at his grave on the day of the bombing, because there was a tulip outside the house.
Mm.
And he wanted it. Mm. He always said, "Mom, can I have it?" Mom said, "No." And then when he was killed, she said, "Now it's time for Ralph to have the tulip."
I am assuming that up there, for curiosity seekers and others, there's not a mass grave, but I am sure
Well, there's a cemetery outside that has about 17 graves, and there's other grave sites within the area. I've seen quite a few of them. There's it's a beautiful place. It's where the school was. They tore down the school in the 70s, but they made a park out of it, and the original cupola stood atop the school, it's in the middle of the park, right, you know, geographically where it would have been.
Is there a plaque there noting?
Oh yeah, there's a plaque,
and there's
actually bricks with the victims' names around this cupola. You can actually see posts from the old school, old cement posts from the foundation poking out through the lawn.
Again, on May 18th, 1927, in the small town of Bath, Michigan, this lunatic, Andrew Kehoe, set off explosives that he had hidden in the basement, right?
Yeah. It's incredible.
What a lunatic. What an absolute lunatic. He killed 38 children and 6 adults.
Counting himself and his wife. Four
counting
adults, really.
Counting himself and his wife, too. There were no other relatives. The Keoghs.
No, they didn't have any children.
I got my fingers crossed that they did not have any relatives.
No, they were relatives, but they kept their distance,
was
obviously.
Is he born and raised in this town?
In Michigan. Yeah, well, no, in Tecumseh, I think he was born.
And what made
She was born and raised in Bath, actually. And they lived in her childhood home.
And
her parents had died, and her father.
How did he wind up there?
Because he married her, and they moved into her, like I said, her childhood home. Her uncle was a well-known politician in the area.
It is quite a story. Bath Massacre, America's first school bombing, by the new updated and expanded edition.
Were one of the first people I told about this when I found the story.
Remember.
Yeah, you were.
And I was stunned then, and I'm stunned now, and this new edition is even better than the original. Arnie Bernstein can be found at arniebernstein.com, and momentarily after the news, he will be found right here. We'll talk a little bit more about the future of Swastika Nation, another remarkable, remarkable book. Here's the news. Welcome back. And I'm sure if you've been listening to Arnie Bernstein talk, you can imagine what a wonderful presenter he would be in some kind of public venue. You do a lot of that, Arnie, bookstores.
Yes, and now that we're opening up again, I'm doing
Now that the world
more.
Is opening up, what's coming up?
Well, I'm going to be at Augie's at Centuries and Sleuths in River Forest.
One of the great independent bookstores
in
the world.
Everybody loves Augie.
Yeah.
April 2nd, Saturday, April 2nd. Keith Lewis and Bookies in Beverly, one of the finest bookstores in Chicago, a real gem.
You don't have to drive too far.
No, down the corner. It's my other home. But we're arranging a date there. And in Lansing, Michigan, I'm going to be doing something at a store called Everybody Reads Books and Stuff. The wonderful Scott Harris runs that.
Good.
And other things as well. I've got on April 26th, I'm going to be doing a Zoom panel on the German-American Bund.
Yeah,
so,
and I think things will start to open up even more. So keep your eyes peeled, ladies and gentlemen, at arniebernstein.com, where you can also buy his books. Now, Swastika Nation was written some time ago, and it was timely then, but it's even more timely now, and there's new interest being generated about this book, there not?
Yes.
Why is that?
It's timely. Who would have ever dreamed? The Bund had something they called their tag, the day when they would overtake the United States and install a fascist leader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seemed like a pipe dream. And then, of course, January 6th.
It seemed like a nightmare.
Oh, my God,
opium pipe dream.
And then it became a real nightmare.
Yeah.
And, people wearing, that guy with the Camp Auschwitz hoodie. What really blew my mind was seeing the Confederate flag in the middle of the Capitol, the building that Lincoln had built during the war to maintain a symbol of the United States.
Yeah. You can't predict the future, but, I mean, there is certainly a feeling out there from some of the people who've approached you to republish this book that this is – that this is, you would update it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, lots of good new information. There was a strong man called the Mighty Adam who
went around beating people up.
Yeah,
Who is the Mighty Adam? Who was?
Oh God, this is a story in and of itself. A guy named Joseph Greenstein, who was from Poland. He was a skinny little runt weakling who apprenticed himself to a strong man at a circus. He was able to bite heads off nails and horseshoes with the he's a real story. He actually was able to pull a chain of cars with his hair, and that wasn't good enough, so he stopped a small airplane from taking off with his hair.
Oh my God, that must have been something.
Oh, he's incredible. And then of course he found some of these bun guys, and
he channeled his strength into beating up.
Oh, exactly,
bun guys.
Exactly. And then there were some journalists here in Chicago, the Metcalf brothers, who mm-hmm. went underground and went undercover and infiltrated the Bund and had this huge expose in the Chicago Daily Times in the 1930s.
Were they terrified?
Yes and no. Yes and no. If they were caught, they would have been in severe trouble.
Yeah.
One of them, actually the one in Chicago, John Metcalf, they said, one guy kept questioning him at a meeting. He said, "You must be a spy." Said, "I'm not a spy." What? And the other people were laughing.
I'm not a spy. I'm a newspaper.
Yeah, right. He said, "What would you do to a spy anyway?" "Well, we'd beat him up." Wow. "Well, no, I'm not a spy. Why would I want to spy? Why would I want to go through that?" It's fascinating stuff.
Well, I hope you can. I know that there have been publishers who've already called you to say, "Look, let's republish this book," and you're sort of shopping that and shopping the
getting
book
it out there, getting it out
and
there,
getting it out there. It's funny. Has there been a documentary based on Swastika Nation?
There have been a few. Yeah. I'm actually going to be in a German public television documentary. It's going to be on German TV this summer. And I was interviewed, Annette Baumheister, who's a German filmmaker. She got a grant from German public television to make a documentary about this. And so I was interviewed last year. She's pretty much close to being done. And there's hoping that in the fall we'll get some international, beyond Germany.
Wow.
I think France is interested. Hopefully we'll get an American distribution on it.
Well, that would be fabulous. Also, as Arnie told you 10, 15 minutes ago, there's a potential four-part documentary in the works.
It is a real thing.
About the Bath Massacre.
Yeah. Matt Martin, wonderful filmmaker.
It seems like a perfect kind of show for, an American experience or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Something like
Netflix,
that.
Because, something like that.
Because, every day we're faced with the horrible tragedy of mass killings. And, you do in the expanded edition, introduction to the book, talk about Sandy Hook.
Yeah, that was, that morning I opened my laptop and they had, "Oh my God, not again," horror. And then I thought, I think I'm going to be busy.
Yeah.
And I was. Yeah. I got calls and I was even interviewed in Australia. But what got me was I called a friend of mine who is a minister in Connecticut. I said, "Do you know what's going on there?" She goes, "Yeah, I live 4 miles from there. I was ministering to some of the families."
Oh,
and I thought, Lord. Oh my God, I'm in a fulcrum between these two towns. And so I called my friends in Bath. They wrote a letter that was sent to Newtown through my friend. It was published in the local paper. They sent a letter back thanking them. And there's an annual luncheon they have in Bath and in May. And that the May after the Sandy Hook shooting, both letters were read. And it was one of the most moving things I've ever seen in my life. Not a dry eye in the house. Two generations of children.
When they do have this luncheon in Bath, are they memorializing? What is the purpose of that?
Well, it's to honor the 50th anniversary class, but it's also to memorialize the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never forgotten. And they have a candlelight vigil every year, which is really nice.
Must be very moving.
It really is. They do broadcast it on Facebook and stuff like that. So
Everything's on Facebook.
Everything's on Facebook. And
as one of the reviews said about Arnie's original Bath Massacre, America's first school bombing in the Grand Rapids Press, a searing and painfully compelling story Ultimately, Bath Massacre serves as a reminder that, whatever the armchair psychologist might say about the effect of violent video games and television on today's society, our modern culture has no monopoly on murderous psychopaths. Ernie Bernstein gives us one in Andrew Kehoe, and once you've read about him, you will never, ever, ever forget about him. Again, the title of that book is Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing. It is out in a new, updated, and expanded edition. You can get all sorts of information and order all of Ernie's books and book him to do a bunch of writer stuff for you and speak to your group at ArnieBernstein.com, ArnieBernstein.com. Give my best to your lovely wife, Cheryl.
Of course, and I will.
Keep in touch.
I certainly will. Thanks for having me again.
Okay, no, it's fine. It's always fun to talk to you, Ernie.